Welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks with expert advice from Jim Lang, Pittsburgh-based CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert. Jim is also the author of Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. To find out more about his book, his practice, Lang Financial Group, and how to secure Jim as a speaker for your next event, visit his website at retiresecure.com. Now, get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. I'm your host, Nicole DiMartino, and of course I'm here with Jim Lang, CPA and attorney and best-selling author of Retire Secure. And first things are first tonight, I want to tell you that Jim's newest book, I've been talking about it for several weeks now, is available. The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again, is now available for order on Amazon.com. Well, tonight we have an excellent show planned, and it's live. So remember, that's tonight's a great night to call in because, of course, we have Jim here. But we're also fortunate to have Elaine Ford here on the show. Floyd on our show here tonight. Elaine, are you there?
I am.
Okay, well, great. Welcome. Elaine is currently the Director of Retirement and Life Planning for Horse's Mouth, LLC. Now, for those of you who might not know about Horse's Mouth, and I'm sure our advisors listening probably do, but Horse's Mouth is a New York-based training and professional development company specifically for financial advisors. Elaine is a 30-year veteran of the financial services industry. She's earned her CFP designation, Certified Financial Planner. She's written 4 books and hundreds of articles on retirement, taxes, and financial planning. In addition, and I know Elaine is, we want to give you some time to talk a little bit more about this yourself, but she's created something called the Roth Mastery Study Group for financial advisors, CPAs, and attorneys. So we certainly have a busy lady here, and we're thrilled to have you. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great. Now, I already mentioned the show is live tonight. I want to give you that number, 412-333-9385. Again, that's 412-333-9385. You can call in and talk with Jim and Elaine.
And before we get started with the substance, and Elaine, I don't even know if you remember this, but I actually met Elaine about 3 years ago or 4 years ago in New York City. There was a conference, and the idea was to determine the ideal distribution pattern for retirees. And it was a conference of mainly academics, and then there were a couple people in practice, of which I was one, and Elaine was there also. And I think it was actually breakfast that I just happened to be sitting next to Elaine, and we started chatting. And I thought, wow, she really gets it. She's really smart. I don't know if you remember that discussion, Elaine. We were talking about immediate deferred annuities, and I thought, man, she's really smart. So then later on, when I heard about this Roth Mastery Group, I thought, well, if Elaine's doing it, it has to be good, and it certainly is. So we're really pleased to have you on the show. Thank you so much, Elaine.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be here. And I have long had great admiration for your work. I've read your books and have followed your work for many years. So this is a mutual admiration society here, I think.
Well, good. Thank you. And one of the interesting things about Roth IRA conversions and some of the related material, and I think that there are a number of people who, in my opinion, think about these topics correctly and in the way that frankly I do. And one of those guys is Bob Keebler, and I think his materials are excellent. And I, before, you know, just recently, I didn't know that Elaine was this strong in Roth IRA and Roth IRA conversion information, but the information from Horse's Mouth, Roth IRA Mastery is just excellent. So I'm going to congratulate
you. Well, thank you. And I just want to say that I give a lot of credit to those industry professionals like Bob Keebler that you mentioned, and Ed Slott and Natalie Choate. And I give them acknowledgement in my course because, you know, everything that I teach in the course came from somewhere. And all of these industry experts really took the time to break down the Internal Revenue Code, because Roth IRAs are not, the information is not so readily available. If you turn to IRS Publication 590 on individual retirement accounts, you're not going to get the nitty-gritty details about Roth IRAs and Roth conversions. So I really give a lot of credit to all of the industry professionals who have, you know, put a lot of effort into really breaking down the code and making it understandable to all of us.
And you've mentioned a bunch of very strong IRA experts, all, by the way, who have been on my radio show. Well, one of the things that I like to do is to, rather than speak in code, is to talk about some of the strategies that our listeners can use to take advantage of the Roth IRA conversions. And it's hard to start because there's so many issues. But one of the issues that I'm often asked about is in terms of, well, gee, Jim, I really don't want to make a Roth IRA conversion because I'm going to have to pay so much taxes. You know, I have a couple $100,000 or sometimes even more than $1 million in my IRA. And if I convert that entire amount, that's going to be a huge tax bill. And then I want to talk about making a partial Roth IRA conversion and the impact of tax brackets. In fact, I think that you actually wrote an article specifically on that, Elaine. So I was going to ask you what some of your advice in terms of making a partial Roth IRA conversion might be to some of our listeners.
Well, yeah, we can jump in right there, or we can if I could back up just a little bit. A lot of people, when they first face this Roth conversion question, it is so complex and there are so many moving parts that they just say, I'm not going to do it. And they look at the amount of taxes, as you mentioned, that they're going to owe on the conversion, and they just fall on the floor. And they just say, how can this possibly be worth it? But people need to remember that not paying taxes on their IRA is not an option. They're going to pay taxes. The question is it going to be now or is it going to be later? And that's really the question that we're trying to answer with the Roth conversion analysis. And so that's really it. So we approach it from two perspectives. There are two, and we call it the conundrum. The first approach is that you enter all of the variables into a calculator and you let the calculator tell you if a conversion makes sense or not. Now, problem with that is that you have to use a lot of assumptions that you're not sure if they're going to work out. I mean, you have to make assumptions for your life expectancy, for your tax brackets, for your rate of return, and many of these assumptions, they're literally unknowable. You just can't know them. And now you can run the calculator many, many times, changing your variables each time, and you can get a better sense of what variables, you know, are more important than others, but you can't know for sure. So the second approach we talk about is just do it. Just assume that doing either a full or a partial Roth conversion is a good thing. And we can't exactly quantify it right now because we don't know what your future tax rate is going to be. We don't know what some of these future things are going to be. But we're going to just trust that you're going to be glad that you did it. So we kind of start with those two approaches. So taking the second approach, just do it. That's where you get into the strategies that you mentioned. So assuming that everybody is going to do some sort of Roth conversion, then the question is, how do you go about doing it? And one strategy is to do a series of conversions, to do a tax analysis and figure out where your taxable income is going to be for the year and where it lies on the tax bracket table, and convert just enough to bring your income up to the top of your current bracket. And then next year, do it again. So that's one strategy. Do you have a comment on that, Jim? Have you looked at that?
Well, we do, whether you call it running the numbers or financial calculations or however you want to call it, we actually do make those projections. I actually have a problem with many of the calculators on the web because they tend to measure in total dollars instead of purchasing power.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, if you were even if all those assumptions came true, I'm not sure that you would get the optimal answer.
True. So I agree with you totally. And another problem with many of the calculators out there is that they measure the results as of a specific date and time, and that date is often age 70 and a half when required minimum distributions have to come out of the traditional IRA. They throw all the numbers in. They say, okay, what's the IRA going to be worth at 70 and a half versus the Roth IRA if you convert? And that tells you your answer. Well, that misses a huge part of the Roth story, because Roth IRAs do not have RMD requirements at age 70 and a half, as many of our listeners probably know. But what they may not realize is the impact of that. When you can leave those assets inside the Roth IRA to grow tax-free, as opposed to taking them out of the traditional IRA, and even if you don't need the income, even if you would be reinvesting your RMDs from the traditional IRA, they would be reinvested in a taxable account. So that would be every year reducing your returns just a little bit in comparison to the Roth. So I just wanted to make that point about, yes, I agree with you that calculators, and I don't think any of them are really perfect, but you know, when you are looking for calculators, I would just say that, you know, A, look at the purchasing power, as you suggest, and B, look at the results throughout the entire distribution period. And if the IRA holder doesn't plan to take distributions until, say, 80 or 85, maybe they're going to draw from taxable accounts and tax-deferred accounts first and leave the Roth account for last, then that Roth grows more valuable day by day throughout the years. And if somebody is using it as an estate planning tool, if they have plenty of assets and don't ever plan to take distributions from the Roth, then a Roth conversion is practically a no-brainer.
Well, I think I agree with you, and I think that calculators, while they might have some value, frankly, they scare me, because sometimes if you put some variables in and you get an answer, if you don't know any better, you think, oh, that's the answer, and then you don't take any further. Where I really think that a legitimate, and we call it running numbers, and we have a number of software programs that we use that help us, but I actually find in practice that it's a much more manual procedure than you might expect. So instead of entering a bunch of variables and hit optimize, it's a little bit more like interpolating, like, well, let's try this amount for these years. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of an art and a science. And in addition to using, and we have several software, Roth IRA conversion software programs that we like, but the other software that we use is actually plain old 1040 software. So in our case, it's ProSystem FX, and for some of the listeners at home, it might be TaxCut or TurboCut, TurboTax or something like that, where we actually test different levels of Roth IRA conversions and then see what the actual tax is. Because you had mentioned, Elaine, that you like to sometimes go to the top of the income tax bracket, and I agree with that. I think that that's a really smart idea. On the other hand, sometimes you get surprises. Like, I'll give you an example. Let's say that you are a senior and you're receiving Social Security, and you're in the 15% bracket, and your plan is to make a Roth IRA conversion that will take you to the top of the 15% bracket. Well, one of the things you have to be careful of is that the additional income on a Roth IRA conversion will increase your taxability for Social Security and also for Medicare Part B. So another thing it might do is it might increase the taxability of your dividends or your capital gains. And to my knowledge, there's no formula that covers all that extensively, and the best way to do it is to actually get out 1040 software, test different amount of conversions, and then see what tends to be the optimal amount.
That's a great idea. It really is a great idea. I would just like to make the point on the Social Security and the Medicare Part B premiums is that, like you say, the conversion income can make worst case scenario if in those two things. You can be taxed on up to 85% of your Social Security benefits, and you could pay, you know, many hundreds of dollars in Part B premiums because you would be in such a high income range. However, it would just be, of course, for the year of the conversion. So sometimes you have to, does your software also sort of calculate if we take this hit up front, it's going to, you know, actually reduce those things later on?
Well, sure. And that's why, to me, you have to, I don't know a better way of getting the optimal number. Now, I'd like to think that I could just look at a situation and off the top of my head say, oh, yes, you should convert X amount. But frankly, I'm not that good. I don't know anybody that really is. And the other thing is, we're talking on the lower end of the taxable income stream. It can go in a similar manner at the upper end. So, for example, if you add income on a Roth IRA conversion. You might end up reducing your exemption amounts. You might end up reducing some of your itemized deductions. So there, I would say it's, you know, you have a lot of great rules of thumb in your quick reference guide, and we'll maybe get to that. But I would say for somebody who's really actually going to be writing a check to the IRS for Roth IRA conversions, that you really want to have somebody that knows what they're doing to make these calculations, or if you're very brave, you know, to get the appropriate materials. Certainly, the risk of sounding like a self-serving, my book, I think, might be an excellent start.
Self-promotion there. There
you go. Which is called Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. And see, I've been living with this book for months and months, and it's actually just now on Amazon, so I'm actually pretty excited about it. But I do like the idea of actually somebody who is who's looking at some of these things and getting the true impact. And I think that it's sometimes not immediately obvious, and it's not clear to me that the calculators have that.
I agree. I would definitely agree with that, because you're looking at many, many variables, the tax variables that you just talked about, the exemption phase outs, which are going to be coming back, and the all of the different deductions and how they're impacted by the extra income the year the conversion is reported, and then contrast that against how these things are going to be more favorable down the road. When you don't have to take taxable required minimum distributions, when you're taking tax-free income out of your Roth IRA, and how much more favorable it's going to be at that time. Of course, those things we can't predict with any certainty, but everything has to be sort of lumped into the questions, the analysis.
Well, actually, you're right. The uncertainty is a huge part of it, and even just the there's so much uncertainty. We don't even know what the tax rates are going to be next year. We don't know if there's going to be a tax increase or not. What I would say with that is that while we don't know what's going to happen next year or even 2 years from now, I think it's relatively clear over the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years, the taxes in general will go up, meaning that Roth IRA conversions, while taxes are still low, are even more favorable. And we know we have the healthcare surtax coming in 2013 for upper income taxpayers. One of the issues with uncertainty, and I'm curious what your advice on this is if you make a Roth IRA conversion in the year 2010, so you make the Roth IRA conversion in calendar year 2010, and this is the only year, unless they make a change in the code, where you actually have a choice. You could recognize that income in calendar year 2010 and presumably file it with your taxes in April 2011, or you can say, I'm going to recognize half the income, not half the tax, by the way, but half the income in 2011 and half in 2012. When we thought the tax rates were almost certainly going to go up for next year, we were saying, hey, you might be better off paying the taxes in 2010, because if you defer it to 11 and 12 and taxes go up, you're going to end up paying more taxes. Now it looks like, particularly for middle-income taxpayers, that taxes may not go up. And I was curious what advice you were giving some of your readers and some of your financial advisors on that issue.
My advice is to wait.
All right.
You don't really have to make the decision until... you really have until October of next year to make your final decision. But really, by April 15th of 2011 is when, if you're going to report the conversion for 2010, you have to pay the taxes. You have to decide by April 15th of 2011. And I think by then, don't you think Congress will have done something? Don't you think we'll know what tax rates will be by then? So, and also, you know, it's not just the tax rates, but it's also people's individual tax situation. So that, is a huge part of it, too. So if people are, have steady income from year to year to year, then it depends more on what the tax rates are going to be but if their income varies, for example, if somebody is in the process of, say, doing some maneuvers to really reduce their 2011 income, then, you know, those people would be wise to report it in 2011 as well.
Well, I think that's great advice. And just to clarify what Elaine was saying, she didn't mean wait until 2011 and 2012 to recognize the income. She meant wait until later 2011 in order to make the decision.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Right. And the other thing, the strategy that we can talk about that plays into this, and it just so happens that has an ulterior motive for somebody with a tax preparation firm like myself, is that we might not have all the decisions that we want to make by April 5th, 2011. So, for example, we'll hopefully get into the issue of Roth IRA conversions and recharacterizations. And sometimes having the additional time, instead of April 15th being our normal deadline, that if we file an extension with our returns, then October 15th becomes, in effect, our deadline. And if I interpret what you're saying right, is if people get extensions on their 1040s until October 15th, 2011, they can actually decide as late as, well, cut your tax preparer a break. Don't say October 14th. But let's say late September 2011, they can decide then whether a couple things. One, whether they want to recognize the conversion in 2010 or half in 2011 and 2012. And they can also decide if they want to recharacterize their Roth IRA conversion that they made in 2010 or recharacterize one of multiple Roth IRA conversions.
Yeah. The thing also to keep in mind, though, is that if you do end up recognizing the income in 2010, the taxes are due on April 15th. So, I mean, yes, you can file an extension, but you would need to, you know, if you think you're going to end up recognizing it on your 2010 return, you know, be aware that you should either pay by April 15th or, you know, face those penalties and interest.
Well, I think, Elaine, you're absolutely right. And the extension to file is not an extension to pay. So
right.
So what we recommend is take your best guess and
right.
and make a estimated payment along with your extension so
yeah.
that if your best guess is true, then your taxes are paid in.
Exactly. And you get the money back, you know, when you file in late September or whenever your tax preparer is able to get it done, then, you know, if you end up not reporting it for 2010, then you, of course, would get that tax money back.
Right. And that additional flexibility, I think, is really important. That I'm a big believer in if you can put off the decision until more information is known. And
exactly.
And we'll have a lot more information. For example, we'll know more about your individual tax circumstances. We'll know more about tax rates. The other thing is that we'll know is we will know the performance of the investment that you chose to make a Roth IRA between the time that you made it and, instead of just April 15th, actually up till, well, again, I'm not going to use the deadline, which is actually October 17th. I'm going to say late September. And
yeah.
and I will admit
Labor Day, Labor Day even.
All right. that's probably better. And I will admit there is a slight ulterior motive here that I don't mind spreading out the tax season to help some of our hardworking CPAs who put in many nights and many weekends during tax season.
Sure. Let me just also reiterate one very important point, which may be obvious, but I just want to make sure it's clear. And that is, even though we're deferring a lot of these decisions till next year, you must do the Roth conversion by December 31st of this year in order to have those options available to you. If you miss it, if you wait until January or later to do the conversion, then you, number one, miss out on what we think will turn out to be very low tax rates for this year, and number two, you miss out on that opportunity to defer the reporting over the 2 years. So I just want to stress that point, that this is the year, this is the time, right now, between now and December 31st, or although give your financial advisor a break and try to do this by December 1st and get those Roth conversions done. And just keeping in mind, too, you can recharacterize next year. So I know that a lot of CPAs and a lot of proponents of Roth conversions are out there saying, don't ask questions, just do it, because you can always undo it. So I don't know if I'd go that far myself. I mean, if there are certain situations where I've seen that Roth conversions are not always the right thing to do, and when that's the case, then, you know, you don't want to do it, and you don't want to put the client through that. But, in very, very many cases, Roth conversions are the right thing, and I think clients are going to come back and thank their financial advisors for recommending them. And people who do them, the people who are listening here who do them, are going to end up being very happy that they made that decision.
Elaine, I'm going to pop in right for a second. We need to take a quick break. And I think in the last couple minutes, we've thrown a lot of dates out there. So maybe when we come back, we'll cover those four key dates. That December 31st, and then we'll talk about the ones in 2011. I'm here with Jim Lang and Elaine Floyd of Horse's Mouth LLC, Director of Retirement and Life Planning, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Well, welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. I'm here with Jim Lang, CPA and attorney and best-selling author of Retire Secure, and just came out with his new book, The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again, and you could get on Amazon.com and get that book for yourself. It's been acclaimed by many, many people. Now, before we went to the break, I heard the two of you. You were saying so many dates, and I think these dates are so important. And Elaine, I'm actually looking at the Roth IRA quick reference guide that I received from Horse's Mouth. And there are four key dates at the top of this sheet. And the first one is December 31st, 2010. And you just were talking about that. Could you just review one more time what's significant about the last day of this year?
In order to report the conversion on your 2010 tax return and pay taxes on the conversion income at 2010 tax rates, the conversion has to be accomplished by December 31st of 2010. The alternative reporting option, rather than pay reported on your 2010 tax return, you have the option of spreading it over 2 years and reporting it on 2011 and 2012. And that is only applicable on conversions accomplished in 2010.
Okay.
Not to confuse me, but I should mention that if there is a gap in time from the time that you take the money out of the traditional IRA and the time you put it into the Roth IRA, because essentially a Roth conversion is a rollover, and you can do it by taking receipt of the assets and then putting it back into the Roth account within 60 days. The effective date is the date that the money comes out of the traditional IRA. So if you take money out on December 15th and you don't get it back into the Roth until January 15th, it still would qualify as a 2010 conversion.
Okay.
But, yeah, the main thing is just get it done before December 31st.
Get it done, right?
And I hate to say this, but what you said just scares the bejeevers out of me, because because I picture, I can take the money out, then I can play with it, do whatever I want, and then I can restore it 60 days later. In fact, I've actually seen cash-tight people borrow money on their IRAs with the intent of restoring it in 60 days, and for some reason or another, sometimes that restoration doesn't always happen, and then they end up with taxes and a 10% penalty and a real mess. So
yep.
I would normally prefer rather than taking physical possession, is basically doing a direct transfer that would be typically characterized as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I'll mention is you do not have to have a separate investment. So some people say, oh, okay, well, I'll convert to a Roth IRA, but I guess what investment do you think I should have? And I think that it's important. Maybe there's some slight, very subtle differences between the investment strategies of a Roth IRA versus a traditional IRA. But I think in general, it's normally, if you're happy with your portfolio, you can keep the same stocks and bonds and whatever is in your portfolio and just convert that to a Roth.
Sure. And the easiest way, really, to do the conversion is to stay with the same custodian and just have the account retitled and keep everything the same. It's just that the account title is different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Jim, because that is gets kind of scary when people take the money and intending to put it back.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one situation where somebody took it out and they put it in a losing investment, and the amount of the investment was much smaller, and then so they it was just a huge loss because they had taxes, they had penalty, and they didn't have the money in effect to pay the taxes and penalty because they lost so much money with the investment going down. So there's a lot of strategies out there that can work out pretty badly, if you're not careful with it.
Right.
Well, why don't we finish the dates, because I know Nicole wanted to go through each one of those dates, and then I have a few other strategies that I want to go through. So the next date on your quick reference guide, and by the way, what I'm talking about, and this note is more for financial advisors than our consumer listeners, is the with the Roth Mastery, you get all types of things. They have some really good information. They have some sample workshops, and they have a number of articles. I just saw this today, Elaine. I was embarrassed that I didn't know this. A number of articles by you that can be distributed to their list as part of the bonus. But the other thing they get is this quick reference guide, which I really like. And the second date on the key date of the Roth IRA quick reference guide is April 15th, 2011. And the way what is written on the card is last day to contribute to a Roth IRA, assuming you're eligible. But I would say, why don't we concentrate on the second point, and I'll let you do that, and I'll just tell you what it is if you don't have that in front of you, which is the last day to file an extension for filing the 2010 tax return.
Which you have to do if you want to recharacterize.
Yeah.
Which we've been talking about, the option to recharacterize, which is basically, you know, the oops option, or it allows you to, you know, undo it, to make it as if the conversion never happened. And you have until the third date on our list, which is October 17th, to do that. However, the importance of that April 15th date is that in order to have the right to do that recharacterization, you have to do one of two things. You either have to file your tax return by April 15th of 2011, or you have to file an extension by that date. If you just don't do anything, assuming that you get the automatic extension till October 15th to file, you have lost the right to recharacterize. So that is just really critically important, that people have to do one of those two things by April 15th. In order to have that right to recharacterize.
All right, and I'd like to cover one more date, and then I actually want to talk a little bit more about recharacterizing, because I think it's a really valuable strategy or technique that a lot of people aren't taking advantage of. But the other key date is January 2nd, 2012, and the quick reference guide says the first day to reconvert if 2010 conversion was recharacterized in 2011. And maybe we'll talk about that a little bit after we talk about generally the recharacterization. So, Elaine, when would you typically recommend that somebody make a conversion and then recharacterize? And by the way I think of it, you know, it's interesting hearing your analysis. It's kind of a oops analysis. And I look at it as an undo, you know, mm-hmm. for people who use Word and other Microsoft products, and you put something in and then you say, oh, no, I want to take that out. There's typically an undo. Well, that's kind of what a Roth IRA recharacterization is of what is like, and it puts you in the same position as if you had never made a conversion in the first place. So let's say, for discussion's sake, that you make a $100,000 Roth IRA conversion in 2010, and let's say you get an extension, and it's now late September 2011, and that $100,000 investment is only worth $60,000. Well, you're pretty unhappy because you don't want to pay tax on $100,000 when the Roth is only $60,000. So you might consider undoing or recharacterizing. And
right.
And I thought if you could tell us some of the techniques that I read about, that frankly it's the same kind of thing that I've been recommending for years, but maybe people can hear it from you about some of the proactive ways you can take advantage of the ability to recharacterize.
Well, first of all, you definitely want to monitor the account, first of all, and compare, at any given time. Now there are two key times to review the value of your account, of your converted Roth IRA. And one key time is at the end, let's say you do the conversion right now. You want to reevaluate that account at the end of this year, because if you if you recharacterize before the year is over, then you can reconvert. The rule is that it has to be at least 30 days or in the next tax year. So if you recharacterize before this tax year is over, then you have, all of next year to do that reconversion if you want. There's not a lot of time between now and the end of the year, so the accounts may not move very much in value. Then the next critical time, of course, is before that April 5th or October 15th or October 17th reconversion deadline date. And so you might want to set a date. Jim, you're a tax preparer. What date do you want to set? Maybe August 1st of next year for everybody to look at their accounts and just get a sense at that time of where the market has been, what the accounts are worth, and sort of gear up for recharacterization. If the market goes up, straight up between now and then nobody has anything to worry about, and there probably won't be any recharacterizations unless somebody just, for some other reason regrets having done the conversion. But otherwise, you want to monitor those accounts and just be ready to recharacterize if they fall in value.
Yeah, I agree with you. The one thing that I was going to add is we've been doing a little bit of an interesting, I don't know if you want to call it trick or strategy or something like that. So let's say this for discussion's sake that you make a Roth IRA, or you've already made a Roth IRA conversion in 2010. And now let's say November or it's even early December 2010 and the investment is way down and you want to recharacterize it. But let's assume for discussion's sake that other investments are down. One way to get around that 30-day rule, which basically says you're not allowed to make a Roth IRA conversion, recharacterize, and then convert the same IRA again, is you could convert a different IRA. So let's say for discussion's sake that you have two accounts, let's call it IRA 1 and IRA 2, and you convert $100,000 of IRA 1 in 2010, and now it's getting towards the end of 2010, and you're and let's say both of them are underwater. So now you had two $100,000 IRAs. You converted one to a Roth, and it's worth only $80,000. And your other IRA 2 is only worth $80,000. What you could do is recharacterize or undo the Roth IRA conversion number 1, and then make a Roth IRA conversion of IRA number 2, and you only have to pay tax on $80,000. Compared to if you just make a Roth IRA conversion of IRA number 1 and then don't do anything. So you literally save taxes on $20,000 by using that little technique.
That is a great idea. I hadn't thought of that. That is a great idea.
Well, I mean, frankly, that's one of the things that I've enjoyed so much about having, people of your stature and Ed Slott and Natalie Schoet and Bob Keebler and even John Bledsoe, who... He's kind of the wildest of them all. He says convert no matter what, and and you're probably a little bit more conservative like I am.
Right, right. Yeah, but sort of piggybacking on your idea, another strategy we had talked about, you know, doing partial conversions to bring the amount up to the top of the tax bracket. Another strategy is to do a series of conversions in for the purpose of what we call time diversification. And it's similar. It's basically the idea what you're talking about. But let's say that you have $250,000 IRA. You don't want to convert it all right now. You just, you know, you're not sure where the market's going to be going over the next year or so. So you convert, you know, $50,000 every few months. And it's the same idea as dollar cost averaging. You don't know, you know, where things are going. So you just, it's like a way of diversifying.
And now the money managers are probably going to scream bloody murder.
Oh, I know.
but ideally, you know what's coming. Ideally, it would be in separate accounts. And that way,
exactly.
And that way, you can keep the winners, and you can recharacterize the losers. Something that
exactly.
that some money managers will do, and some will scream bloody murder, and then do, and then some won't do at all.
Right.
The other thing that I was kind of interested in talking about, and we haven't talked about this at all, but one of the at that same workshop that I met you. There was another participant there named Larry Kotlikoff, and Larry is an economist at the University of Boston. And Larry has some interesting strategies regarding either holding up taking your Social Security or, in the event that you have already taken Social Security, to actually give it back, which really goes against, you know, any gut instinct that people might have. And his analysis said, let's say for discussion's sake, you started taking Social Security when you were 62 or 66, and let's say you've collected $100,000 or $150,000 in Social Security, or even $60,000 or $50,000. His strategy says, hey, take it back or give it back, and then what happens is you'll get a higher Social Security for the rest of your life. And he has some fairly convincing analysis of that. And one of the reasons why that caught my eye is because when you give your Social Security back, it's very often a taxable deduction, and you can deduct that return of your Social Security. And my idea, let's say piggybacking on Larry's idea, is to consider giving back your Social Security, making a Roth IRA conversion at the same year, taking advantage of the deduction of giving back the Social Security. Now, this might really sound sick to people. Oh, this guy's not only telling me to give back Social Security, he's also telling me to pay some taxes on a Roth IRA conversion at the same time. But I think a lot of cases, you're actually going to be better off. And I've actually read that the IRS is, or maybe the Social Security Administration, is thinking of closing that option of giving back your Social Security. I wondered, and I know, frankly, in fact, I own it, you guys have some software on when to take Social Security, and I wonder if you have some thoughts on that issue.
Oh, I definitely have thoughts.
I don't wonder at all if you have thoughts on that issue. I wonder what those thoughts are.
Okay. The first thought is we always recommend delaying if at all possible, and that's especially true for the high earner in a marriage. If you have, it's usually the husband. Sorry to, you know, be stereotypical, but
better to hear from you than from me.
If you have a high earning spouse who it really makes sense for that spouse to wait until age 70 to take benefits initially, because it generates maximum income while the two spouses are alive, and then it also raises the survivor benefit, so it maximizes the widow's income after that first spouse dies. So that's number one. Number two, mm-hmm. if anybody has taken Social Security early and then realized that it was a mistake, it very often is the right thing to do to repay those benefits. I've seen many analyses on this. You're essentially buying an annuity from Social Security because if you have a lump sum to pay back those benefits, you can either put it into Social Security or you can put it into something else. And the payback for putting it into Social Security is higher, and it's essentially risk-free. So that's number two. Number three, if somebody is thinking about applying at age 62 with the intention of undoing it at age 70, repaying those benefits and reapplying, I would not recommend it. And the reason is, like you say, where it is that they are thinking of taking that right away or shortening the period, maybe making it available for 12 months only for people who really do make an honest mistake. Maybe they apply at 62 because they lost their job and then they start working again and don't want the Social Security. So you have to provide for people who have, you know, legitimate reasons for wanting to do that. But for people who are trying to game the system by taking it at 62, get that, you know, interest-free returns on that money from age 62 to 70 and then pay it back, they may be out of luck because that option may not be available to them, and then they'll be stuck with that low benefit for life. And those are my opinions on that.
And that's probably, I guarantee our listeners, that's the condensed version.
Definitely.
I'm just going to add one other little thing that, and actually this came right from Larry Kotlikoff. You were right, and you referred to the person with the higher earning record. Sometimes it makes sense to apply and suspend your Social Security collection, and sometimes it makes sense for the spouse of the high earner to apply for and actually start collecting on his record, because it will not hurt him when he starts taking at 70. And actually, you know, Larry was on this show, and he spoke about this at length. And when I was writing this book, I wanted to talk about combining Roth IRA conversions and Social Security. So I thought, well, I'm going to write it the best way I understand it. And then rather than just sending it out there, I thought I would send it to Larry to have him review it. And Larry was pretty funny. So I sent him the chapter, and he made a couple edits. One of the sentences I said is, if Larry is right, and he just scratched that out.
Of course.
And then the other thing is he added the part about applying and suspending for the spouse. But the editor for my book is actually my mom. I have a professional editor also, but my mom is a retired journalism professor, and she is not shy with the red pen. So, you know, I gave her the material, and usually there was one or two corrections on more pages than there weren't. And anyway, Larry actually contributed like practically a page of his own analysis that I include in the book. And I didn't tell my mother that somebody else wrote that particular part. And then next to it, not only were there no red marks, but there was very good next to Larry's section. So that part is in the book. So I think that we are in the same ballpark with that.
Alrighty, we're going to take a quick break. We have a couple minutes left. When we come back, Elaine, I want to give you a few minutes to talk about your Roth Mastery Study Group, because we certainly have a lot of advisors that listen, and I want to give you that chance. We will be right back. You're listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Well, welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. I'm here with Jim Lang, CPA and attorney, and Elaine Floyd of Horse's Mouth, LLC. And also a reminder, Jim's newest book, The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again, is now available on Amazon.com. If you do go on to Amazon.com, you purchase the book. If you email me your receipt, I will send you the lost chapters. This is some additional information that is not in the book. You will absolutely love it. I'm Nicole. It's Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E, at paytaxeslater.com. And before we have a couple minutes left, Elaine, I wanted to just give you a minute to mention a little bit about your Roth Mastery Study Group.
Thank you.
If you don't mind.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So we did a survey at the beginning of this year because the media had done such a blitz on Roth IRAs because of the lifting of the $100,000 income limit at the beginning of this year. So we did a survey among our members, and we asked them, you know, what do you think about Roth conversions? How much do you know about them? Do you plan on doing them? And basically, you know, in a nutshell, the response was, well, we don't think very much of them, and we really don't know very much about them. So we decided that
And I would agree with that.
Well, say it again.
I'm in front of a lot of financial advisors, and unfortunately, I would agree with you that most advisors are really not up to par on these strategies.
Well, you know, in their defense, there is a lot to it. What I had to go through to put this program together was review, I mean, hundreds of articles and academic books. And, I mean, thank goodness I didn't have to tackle the code itself. As I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. Ed Slott, Natalie Choate, and some of those other people have done that. So, but what I did have to do was wade through a lot of material and just kind of round it up and put it all in one place. So that's really what I did. It's the Roth Mastery Study Group itself is a series of 4 one-hour webinars given on Wednesdays. We just started a new series last week, Series 1, which is 15 Roth scenarios where we show how our calculator works. Sessions two and three are about the nuts and bolts of actually doing conversions, some of the very technical rules involved in them and the reconversions and so on, or recharacterizations rather. And then session 4 is about client education and marketing. The study group includes a client seminar and script. It also includes what we call a strategic alliances roundtable where financial advisors can meet with CPAs and attorneys like Jim and put their heads together and use the Roth conversion as an opportunity to both do excellent work for their clients and also market to new clients. So it's a whole package. We're very proud of it. Everything that we've done is posted on our Roth Mastery website once you become a subscriber, so that if you can't dial in at the appointed time for the webinars, you can always download them and listen to them at your convenience. So we've had a lot of good response, and people are doing out there doing a lot of, I like to call them Roth conversion conversations, because that's really how it starts with clients and prospects.
Well, great.
Well, Elaine, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the show, and I just love your material, and I think that you are a great resource for advisors, and frankly have been for me. So I want to thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Well, everyone out there, have a great evening. And again, Amazon.com is the Roth Revolution. Pay taxes once and never again. You can certainly order it. It's ready to go. Thanks for listening. You're listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Portions of the audio that you just heard will be posted online at RetireSecure.com. You can also find a list of upcoming events and topics at RetireSecure.com. To seek Jim's advice personally or to speak to a member of his dedicated staff at Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, call 412-521-2732. Join us again in 2 weeks when we talk more smart money.